from deep inside your radio.
Welcome back, Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh was gone last week, ladies and gentlemen. They had a little vacation, but they're back. You think if I talked slowly, inhaled more audibly, Robert Altman would do a movie about my radio show, and Pittsburgh would remember to record it? I don't know. It's a question I can't answer. I ask it, but I can't answer it. So like so many of the questions I ask. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just a few bad apples. Members of a California Army National Guard company that was placed on restrictive duty in Iraq after being implicated in the latest detainee abuse scandal. Did you realize there was a new one? There's always a new one. Something new for you. Members of that company have trained and conducted joint operations with Iraqi police forces, including an elite unit accused of brutality. I love the juxtaposition. To me, that's what the cool life is all about. Elite and brutal. The Wolf Brigade of the Iraqi police is famous in Iraq for staging daring raids in Mosul and Baghdad, and for its commander, who became a national celebrity after he hosted televised confessions of alleged insurgents that the group captured. Critics of the forces say they use torture to coerce confessions from suspected insurgents. Military officials said this week they did not know whether the company's association with Iraqi special forces had anything to do with the allegations of detainee abuse. It's a coincidence. It's a total freaking coincidence. This is from the Los Angeles Dog Trainer, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, so expect corrections of it soon. The most egregious case of detainee abuse reported so far occurred after a June insurgent attack when soldiers allegedly tortured Iraqi detainees with an electric stun gun. At least one instance of that abuse was recorded on video. That's so thoughtful of him. I've never seen stun gun torture before. I might even use PayPal. As many as 17 soldiers are under investigation for mistreatment of Iraqi prisoners, and six others have been charged with dereliction of duty, and the battalion commander has been suspended during the investigation. In an online newsletter of this particular National Guard company, Alpha Company, the unit commander, Captain Keith Haviland, who in real life is a Pomona-based physical therapist, doctor, it hurts right here, you bet it will, wrote about 2nd Platoon's ceding of responsibility for several Baghdad neighborhoods to Iraqi police forces. Quote, we have assigned our platoon to help them transition and some of our, quote, killer company aggressive tactical spirit in them, he wrote. The platoon has been integrated with the Iraqi police in sector and have trained them to do raids and patrol. Sunni human rights advocates charged that the brigade elicited confessions by beating their captives. A woman interviewed by the L.A. Dog Trainer this year said brigade officers whipped her sister with telephone wires to force her to confess to terrorist acts and to accuse her male associates of raping her and of having homosexual relations. The detainee was later released after it was determined that her confessions had been coerced. Just a few bad apples, ladies. Oh, wait a minute. We got some more. Harvest has increased. Military interrogators at the Abu Ghraib prison learned about the use of military working dogs to intimidate detainees from a team of interrogators dispatched from Guantanamo Bay. This according to court testimony this week. They didn't make it up. It was some educated apples, ladies and gentlemen. One interrogation analyst also testified that sleep deprivation and forced nudity which were used in Guantanamo on high-value detainees. That's the kind of compliment you really don't want paid to you. You, sir, are a high-value detainee. These tactics were later approved at Abu Ghraib. Another soldier said that interrogators would regularly pass instructions to have dog handlers and military police scare up detainees, part of an improved approach that relied on exploiting the fear of dogs. You know, it's like Johnny Appleseed said, they don't just grow. Hello, welcome to the show.
Heck of sweep all my cares away. Feeling low, here I go. I sure got somebody waits for me, sugar sweet, so has she. Bye. I say bye. Somebody shines light. I'm coming on home tonight now. Bye. I want to say bye bye.
This moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly, blackbird, fly into the light of the dark black night. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly into the light of a dark black night. All your life you're only waiting for this moment to arrive. You were only waiting for this moment to arrive.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless. That's the way I like to say it. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this week's edition of the show. This very week, done this week for your listening pleasure, for people in Pittsburgh who thought that just do a show and then do it again this exactly the same then the very next week. That's not the way it works, ladies and gentlemen. Fresh show every week because I can't, the boy can't help it. And now, for whatever purpose, I'm going to read the trades for you. It's a thing I do. Didn't do it last week. That's how you can tell it's this week's show. In Japan, it'll be raining ads. What? I'll read it for you. From Space Daily. Here comes. After being bombarded by commercials on the way to work and watching promotions pop up on the internet, the Japanese consumer could soon be hit by advertisements where they least expect them. On their hands. Researchers are working on Information Rain, taking advertisements to the realm of mock meteorology. A projector on a tall tripod shows images of raindrops hitting the ground and making ripples in hopes that people will enter the rainy area and hold out their palms. A camera tracks the entrance movements and sends that data to connected computers. Then the projector shoots out a round-shaped advertisement which can post words such as sale right onto their hands. It's quite natural that you hold out your palm when it starts raining, says Yoko Ishii, a chief researcher in the Human Interaction Project. People jot things down on their palms. The palm is the information tool closest to humans, she said. Much as the internet gave way to unique pop-up and interactive advertisements, and aren't those great, the new technology can develop in its own fashion to find ways to make the hand ads more attractive, she said. Quote, advertisements are usually something that's given to you. That's right, I regard them all as gifts. Get back to the quote, Harry. Yes, sir. But it would be different if they showed up on your palms. You would feel more familiar with the message that appears in your personal area, she said. An advertisement on the body would help convince people that the message is really meant for them, she added. Yes, the Japanese really are different from you and me, ladies and gentlemen. And from Media Post, product placement surges in newspapers. Not just TV. I'm reading that for you, too. It's a twofer. Product placement has become the cause célèbre on Madison Avenue, transforming the TV advertising marketplace, but a new report shows it is a much bigger deal that has influenced virtually all forms of media, even supposedly sacrosanct print outlets such as newspapers and magazines, where paid placements are the fastest-growing segment of the business. Although highly controversial, the total value of product placements in magazines is on pace to grow 17.5% this year, and product placements in newspapers projected to rise almost as much, 17%, to $65 million. This according to PQ Media, one of the most respected researchers tracking the economics of media. Hell, I even respect him. Quote, publishers are becoming increasingly receptive to use the practice of product placement, says Patrick Quinn, president and founder of PQ Media. It's not the Pat Quinn I know. The report that reveals that product placement is influencing every segment of media, including print, video games, online books, and, of course, radio and recorded music. We know about that. Where's my money for playing the songs I play on this? I haven't... Those checks are late, boys. Excuse me, the sneakers are late. While product placement in print is still relatively small compared to the billions spent advertising in newspapers and magazines, the rapid rise of the practice may alarm some print industry watchdogs, especially top editors who've been seeking to keep the practice at bay. During the Association of National Advertisers Print Advertising and Advertising Forum in New York last month, top editors representing the American Society of Magazine Editors denied their publications or any major magazine titles accepted product placements. But advertisers and agency executives speaking at that same forum implied the practice was pervasive, as did a survey of members of the Association of National Advertisers, which showed magazines to be the second most common medium for product placement deals after television. Maybe rain would be better. You know, because it's on my intimate body part. Second thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, inevitable when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Here's a report from our attempt to encourage democracy not so far away in one of our own little properties. The U.S. Navy hired a communications firm for $1.5 million in an apparent attempt to influence the outcome of a vote being held in Puerto Rico. The vote, whether part of the island of Vieques in Puerto Rico, would continue to be used as a bombing range by the Navy. Seems fair. According to documents obtained by Judicial Watch, the Navy's Fleet and Industrial Supply Center in Norfolk, Virginia, contracted with the Rendon Group, Washington, for advice on dissemination of accurate information regarding that referendum. It later modified the contract to have Rendon, quote, conduct public outreach to build grassroots support for Navy training during the vote. Rendon was to develop methods and tracking procedures to increase support among citizens in Vieques to support and vote in the referendum for the option of continued Navy training. This is possibly illegal, ladies and gentlemen, you know. But who's gonna go after them? It's the Navy. They're in the Navy. I'd say call the Indian or the cop. Ladies and gentlemen, in the years to come, the story of our adventure in Iraq is going to be noteworthy for several reasons, one of which is one of the great success stories of all times. If you want to have a role model for somebody who gets knocked down, comes back up again and again and again, a true Horatio Alger story, except for the fact that he's been convicted of bank fraud and is a fugitive from Jordanian justice. You could not have a better story than that of Ahmed Chalabi. This is from Knight Ridder newspapers. A year after observers pronounced him finished, spurned by one-time American sponsors and with no apparent political base in Iraq, Chalabi is more powerful than ever. He is deputy premier in the government. Chalabi oversees Iraq's vast oil resources as chairman of the Energy Council. He presides over a board that regulates multi-million-dollar rebuilding contracts. He commands the controversial purge of former Ba'ath Party members from government and from the Iraq Special Tribunal prosecuting Saddam Hussein. Until an oil minister was named, Chalabi held that job too. One of his top aides, Intifad Kanbar, is headed for a plum job at the Iraqi embassy in Washington. Jollibee's Harvard-educated nephew is the finance minister. On a visit to a hospital in southern Iraq, the secular Jollibee was introduced as, quote, the pride of the Shiites, suggesting that at least some members of the majority sect now claim him as their own. Ahmed Jollibee, ladies and gentlemen. Kids in American schools, years from now, are going to study the example of Ahmed Jollibee. Because even when the U.S. Pentagon turned against him, bam, he's back. More news from outside the bubble. The Army National Guard has fallen 23% behind its recruiting goal so far this year and is unlikely to meet its annual quota, largely because of a dramatic drop in recruits from the South. Yeah, the Southland, ladies and gentlemen, not getting into the Guard like they used to. Some experts worry the Guard is being stretched thin while unable to fill the ranks. The South is historically the mother lode for recruiters. The Southern deficit is nearly a third of the Guard's overall enlistment problem during the first 9 months of the fiscal year. Said Virginia recruiting official Lieutenant Colonel Darrell Francis, "We're not doing as well as we want to do." Louisiana and the District of Columbia have barely filled half their needs. Recruiting officials in North Carolina and Florida were unavailable for comment. The long-term impact of the recruiting shortfall is worrisome to some military experts. Too few does matter. You want to be able to do what you need to do, said Christopher Hellman, a military analyst who has been studying Don Rumsfeld's sentence constructions. Guardsmen and reservists comprise 40% of the troops in Iraq today. National Guard recruiting has also plummeted in the West from 113% of goal attained in 2003 to only 69% this year. The Northeast has the worst recruiting effort, signing up only two-thirds of the quota. The only place where they're holding their own is the Midwest. Iraq's police force has suffered from inadequate recruiting and screening of candidates, apparently even allowing some insurgents to join, this according to a U.S. report, which said the effort to build up Iraq's police agencies has been a qualified success. Yeah, except for letting insurgents join. It's been great. It's been a success like the shuttle flight. Hey, it's up there. In a written response, the military said it is addressing most of the concerns raised by the study. One of the report's key criticisms was that the coalition military personnel are not able to properly find and screen candidates for the police force. Aside from that, inducting criminals into the Iraqi police is a continual concern, says the report. Even more troubling is infiltration by intending terrorists or insurgents. There is sufficient evidence to conclude that such persons indeed are among the ranks of Iraqi police, the report said. Despite recent improvements, it added too many recruits are marginally illiterate. Some show up for training with criminal records or physical handicaps. But aside from that, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing a fine, fine, fine job. And I'm sure you know this, but just in case you don't, it didn't make big news this week. John Bolton, who President Bush is going to appoint to be U.S. ambassador to the U.N. as soon as the Congress clears town in a recess appointment, neglected to tell Congress that he had been interviewed in a government investigation into the faulty pre-war intelligence about Iraq trying to buy uranium yellow cake from Niger. By the way, all the media attention to this story, and almost never is there even a parenthetical, by the way, Niger is going through a hellish famine at the moment, weather and locusts and whatever, so send food. It's like the attitude is, let him eat yellow cake. Democratic senators said the admission that Bolton forgot that he was interviewed as part of that investigation should prevent Bush from appointing him, but smart people say it won't. Bolton was interviewed by the State Department Inspector General in 2003 as part of a joint investigation with the CIA into that report of pre-war Iraqi into those pre-war reports of Iraqi attempts to buy nuclear materials from Niger. His statement came hours after another State Department official said Bolton had correctly answered a Senate questionnaire when he wrote that he had not testified to a grand jury or been interviewed by investigators in any inquiry over the past 5 years. He signed it under penalty of perjury? Guess not. The State Department spokesman, Noel Clay, said Bolton didn't recall being interviewed by the State Department's Inspector General. Does it happen every day? Is it that common? Yeah, you know, the Inspector General came in like he does. Therefore, his form as submitted was inaccurate, the State Department spokesman said. He will correct it. Said Joe Biden, it seems unusual Mr. Bolton would not remember his involvement in such a serious matter. John Bolton, ladies and gentlemen, he's the perfect guy to send to the UN, if you ask me. If he can forget about that, he can certainly be the next guy to deliver a speech about mobile weapons labs when we need one. Because Colin Powell is no longer available. And an Indiana National Guardsman pleaded guilty this week to negligent homicide in the death of an Iraqi police officer, a crime he apparently attempted to cover up by shooting himself in the stomach. Corporal Dustin Berg received, any guesses? Yes, an 18-month prison sentence for killing a guy and then shooting himself to try to make it look like self-defense. He's already punished himself, said his attorney. He shot himself. He's already pleaded guilty. He's already accepted responsibility. A lengthy term of confinement will have no rehabilitative effect, his attorney said. Yeah, it'll send a good message to the Iraqis, though. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, and inside a little bit. Not copyrighted. But here at the end of this segment, just a note on acronyms. Because I knew this, and yet I didn't quite know it. You know, the Senate, the Congress this week wrapped up work on renewing the USA Patriot Act. But do you know why it's called the USA Patriot Act? Because here is the official name of the legislation. Uniting and strengthening America by providing appropriate tools required to intercept and obstruct terrorism. Spells out USA Patriot. Good night.
Skylar. Have you anything to say to me? Won't you tell me where my love can be? Is there a meadow in the mist where someone's waiting to be kissed? Skylark, have you seen a valley green with spring? Where my heart can go a-journeying over the shadows and the rain to a blossom-covered lane, and in your lonely flight, haven't you heard the music of the night? Wonderful music, faint as a will-o'-the-wisp, crazy as a loon, sad as a gypsy serenading the moon. Skylark, I don't know if you can find these things, but my heart is riding on your wings. So if you see them anywhere, won't you lead me there? Thank you. skylight. I don't know if you can find these things, but my heart is riding on your wings. So if you see them anywhere, won't you lead me there?
This is Le Show, and ladies and gentlemen, the global war on terror is over. I don't know if you heard it. I think made some of the papers this week. It was in the New York Times. Global war on terror is over. We don't know who won. The Bush administration is retooling its slogan for the fight against Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups, pushing the idea that the long-term struggle is as much an ideological battle as a military mission, this according to senior administration and military officials. In recent speeches, Don Rumsfeld and the country's top military officer, I guess that would be Richard Myers, General of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, have spoken of a, quote, global struggle against violent extremism, unquote, rather than the, quote, global war on terror, unquote, GWOT, which had been the catchphrase of choice. Administration officials say the earlier phrase may have outlived its usefulness because it focused attention solely and incorrectly on the military campaign. General Myers told the National Press Club this week he had objected to the use of the term war on terrorism before because if you call it a war, then you think of people in uniform as being the solution. Unquote. He said the threat instead should be defined as violent extremism with the recognition that terror is the method they use. The solution is more diplomatic, more economic, more political than it is military, he concluded. Administration and political Pentagon officials say the revamped campaign has grown out of meetings of President Bush's senior national security advisors that began early this year and reflects the evolution in Bush's own thinking. Nearly 4 years after the 9/11 attacks, Rumsfeld spoke in the new terms last week when he addressed an audience in Annapolis, Maryland. He described America's efforts as it, quote, wages the global struggle against the enemies of freedom, the enemies of civilization. The shifting language is one of the most public changes in the administration's strategy to battle Al-Qaeda and the affiliates. Says Stephen Hadley, the new national security advisor, it's broader than a military war on terror, it's a global struggle against extremism. The language shift came at a time when, with the Senate confirmation of Karen Hughes, longtime Bush advisor, as new head of public diplomacy, the administration is trying to bolster the public diplomacy efforts. Rumsfeld spokesman Lawrence DeRita said the change in language is not a shift in thinking, but a continuation of the immediate post-9/11 approach. What? Oh, the president, DeRita said, then said we were going to use all the means of national power and influence to defeat this enemy. We must continue to be more expansive than what the public is understandably focused on now, Afghanistan and Iraq. Douglas Feith, outgoing Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, is the author of the Feith-based policy we have now, said in an interview, if America's efforts were limited to protecting the homeland and attacking and disrupting terrorist networks, you're on a treadmill that's likely to get faster and faster with time. The key is addressing the ideological part of the war that deals with how the terrorists recruit and indoctrinate new terrorists, unquote. By the way, for some information on that, well, check out Eat the Press and the Huffington Post, and I'll guide you to it. But in the meantime, so they had some meetings to decide that it's no longer a global war on terror. Thankfully, the last in that series of meetings was recorded.
All right, Condi, why don't we pick up where we left off in the last meeting of the War Cabinet?
That was the agreed-upon agenda, Mr. President, so... In fact, it's a very good idea.
Thanks. Since I'm over here on another secret visit to Iraq, I'd appreciate it if you could all speak up a little bit.
Donna, let me just suggest you turn up the volume at your end. If I spoke loudly, I wouldn't have this job in the first place.
You got it, Mr. Vice President.
Okay, we got all our ducks in a row. Let's get to it. I got Karl Rove going off a track next door, man. If I ever thought I'd end up helping Karl Rove keep it together, I'd never have taken this.
All right, Mr. President, from the previous meetings, I think we have a consensus that the phrase global war on terror has outlived its lack of usefulness and that we need to replace it with hopefully another term.
As opposed to replacing it with nothing?
Well, that was an option left on the table.
Well, personally, I think if we just stopped saying global war on terror and didn't replace it with anything, you know, our critics would they begin to notice it. We all know that nature abhors a vacuum, and that's one reason I abhor nature. So I think we do need an enhanced set of verbiage to work with here.
Okay, one of the problems I think we explicitorated last time was that maybe we're under-definitioning the problem, you know, so what's bigger than global? You know, see, how about the universal war on terror? See, just talking aloud here, but this ties in with our Mars mission plans, because if we find any terrorism on Mars, that's automatically included in our declared strategy.
Mm-hmm. Mr. President and fellow members of the War Cabinet, I think global war on terror as a slogan, as a tent pole, as an explanatory umbrella for everything we do or intend to do has served us well. If we're going to replace it with something, I agree it should be more expansive, but I don't think we need to take on any interplanetary responsibility at this time of strained resources within Don's shop. Let's expand the other end of the phrase. I propose the global war on violence.
Dick, I hate to get pedantic on you from this distance, but isn't a war on violence just a little too oxymoronic to fly?
Well, then you get into the business of trying to describe the violence we're declaring war on.
Yeah.
What about the global war on unforgivable violence?
Yeah. Well, Mr. Vice President, I wonder if we really want to get into the thicket of forgivability here. And more importantly, I think we all agree we've gotten great mileage out of the GWOT. Mm-hmm. I think it resonated with our supporters in a way that a GWOFV just wouldn't.
Now, you're focusing specifically on the abbreviational aspect of the concept?
Yes, I am. You've got to have a handy takeaway for this operation, as our friends on the corporate side like to say. And I think GWOFV is a little bit much for the mind to lug.
Don, as I recollectorate it from our last go-round on this, you had some problem with the word war.
Yes, sir.
You know, me, I still can't help but think that that's gold for you folks, but...
Mr. President, General Myers thinks it's putting too much weight on the military leg of the overall policy stool. Whatever we choose needs to...
No, it needs to better support the whole stool. I'm with you on that, Don.
Okay.
I think one thing I've earned from serious students of my presidency is a reputation as a strong and determined person who just keeps thinking in terms of the whole stool.
You know, the communists used to have what they called the struggle theory of history. Mm. The late Sam Yorty was very good on that. Maybe now that there aren't any communists around anymore, that might be a useful package in which to wrap our product. Takes a little of the heat off Don's shop, emphasizes that this is an operation that happens across government. We're all in this struggle together.
Well, you know, I still hear the word class when I hear struggle.
Mm.
But maybe that's just me.
See, when I hear the word struggle, I think of hard work. I guess that's why they make different colored erasers.
So, Dick, the metamatrix of struggle is that Homeland Security is in it, State is in it, CIA is engaged in it.
Well, we can hope.
It's not just DOD. I think given our shortcomings in the recruitment arena this last few years, that helps with the president's whole stool theory.
I agree. The president has an excellent conceptual framework for our work here, and the word struggle tees it up well. But our more serious critics have always made a point about the absurdity of warring or struggling, if you will, against a tactic. The point being that terror is just a tactic.
Oh, sure, Condi, but terrorism, see? Mm-hmm. That's a real ism.
So,
struggle against violence. You wouldn't buy either because...
Because violence is a tactic, mm-hmm, that's right. Mm-hmm. Although, I'm not buying and selling anything here, Mr. Vice President. I'm just trying to think through our challenge.
Look, I can only be in the green zone for a limited amount of time before somebody leaks my location to unauthorized persons. So let me try to cut through this maze with a...
Well, with a maze cutter would be my suggestion.
Okay, good. We like struggles, but violence is a tactic, so make it an adjective. Now it's not what we're struggling against, it's describing what we're struggling against. Mm. Then you put an ism at the end of it, and I can slip into something a little more secure.
Yeah, I don't suppose anybody would go for violent terrorism. I mean, I know people go for it. That's why we're here. But I mean, the phraseography of it.
Yeah. See, I think that puts us right back in the box we're trying with a certain amount of urgency to crawl out of.
Also, it's a little repetitive. I mean, what would nonviolent terrorism be? I suppose internet hacking, identity theft, if it's done by an organized ring of Islamofascists. Mm-hmm. I guess I'm answering my own questions here. Do we not want to come right out and say, struggle against Islamofascists?
See, I worry that just invites them to fake a bunch of conversions, and then they say, hey, we're all Christians now. Stop struggling.
Well, Mr. President, far be it from me to propose an actual solution. I don't necessarily think that's my role here.
No.
But let me just unfurl this and see if anyone tries to burn it. What about violent extremism?
As opposed to extreme violence, which sounds like some sort of cage fight in Iowa. Extremist violence could work, though.
Look, we've got our ism, we've got our violence, we've got our struggle. I'm ready to sign off on it and hop in the chopper, personally.
I can't help pointing out that the acronym for Struggle Against Violent Extremism spells out SAVE.
Mm-hmm.
Struggle Against Extreme Violence spells out SAVE, but it's spelled wrong, and that would work against the president's education policy, I think.
See, that's great acronymics. Look, I think we've been sitting on this egg long enough. Why not go ahead and hatch it?
Well, I'm in.
Just for the purposes of being able to declare this exercise useful and productive, I'll buy in.
Me too, actually.
All right, good deal. See, we'll get the press people cracking on this.
And let's adjourn this meeting of the War Cabinet with the suggestion that for the next meeting, we come in with some ideas on what to do about Iraq. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Gotta go hold Carl's hand.
Just listen to the Bob White. He never could sing right.
You should hip him to the latest sound and the talk that's going round.
Well, I was talking to the parakeet, and he said, man, now about that beat.
How about that beat?
Hey, Bob White, ain't you gonna swing tonight?
Several people heard the albatross.
Yes.
Whisper, Robert is on the song.
I know for a fact he's on the wagon.
Bob White, nothing but a neophyte.
John, what does that word mean?
Amateur.
Even the pheasant found it unpleasant hearing you hit that flat note.
Whereas the sparrow froze to his marrow when he heard that note.
The opinion of the tufted grouse is you play to an empty house.
Could happen to anybody.
Sure could.
Get up off that hair. Shape up. Make it there. Bob White, you gotta sing it out tonight. Take a letter to the Meadowlark in reply to his rude remark.
Well, the mails must go through.
Bob White invites you to a bash tonight.
My tux isn't even pressed. Take a wire to the Nightingale. I tell him Bob ain't begun to wail. Bob White's gonna put him down for spite.
Circulate the word, call up the catbird. Tell that old fat bird he's gonna sing a storm up.
Hip the canary, it'll be scary after the warm-up.
Man, he's even gonna gas the goose. He'll be a looser than Dr. Seuss.
Wait a minute, John. Do I detect a note of meaning that he's gonna be right in tune?
Man, I'm telling you, he's gonna be on the moon.
I see.
Bob White,
He's gonna ball it up tonight. Oh, he's in there.
Oh, he whistles pretty.
Yeah, like a bird.
What?
Here's a wire from the Albatross.
Sounds urgent.
It reads, Robert is still the boss.
Well, thank you very much, folks.
Bob White, he was in the groove tonight.
I quote directly from the Whooping Crane. He says, man, it was like insane.
He made it clear.
Bob White really fought a groovy fight. I thought I had him dead in the third round.
Hey, old Papa Redbird, who is the head bird, says you were in there swinging.
He was trying. Even a jackdaw flew out the back door, bucking and winging.
You instigated such a swinging gig that all them quadrupeds want to dig.
Yeah, yeah. You mean,
Here comes the moose and elk.
And there goes Lawrence Welk.
Bob White.
Bob White.
Bob White. You really sang it out.
For the birds.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Ahmed Rassam, an Algerian who plotted to bomb the Los Angeles International Airport on the eve of the millennium, was sentenced to 22 years in prison this week by a judge who used the opportunity to sternly criticize the Bush administration's anti-terrorism tactics. Quote, we did not need to use a secret military tribunal, detain the defendant indefinitely, or deny the defendant the right to counsel, Judge John C. Coffinor said. The message to the world from the sentencing is that our courts have not abandoned our commitment to the ideals that set our nation apart, unquote. Rassam did not speak in court, but provided a short written statement in which he thanked the judge, renounced violence of any kind, and apologized for his actions. Two Florida men who bid on hundreds of military supply contracts were sentenced this week to federal prison for providing the military with at least $4 million in fraudulent electronic parts, many of which government officials said impeded U.S. troops at war in Iraq. Horace Christopher Daughtry and George Searcy pleaded guilty to conspiring to defraud the Department of Defense after discovering that it doesn't check backgrounds and accept bids online for supply contracts worth less than $100,000. They admitted shipping thousands of non-working parts for various pieces of military equipment. When military officials discovered a problem with one of their shipments, they simply changed company names and kept bidding. Both men apologized for their involvement. This is something that should never have happened, Searcy said. It was out of greed. Well, that's the best excuse. I kept going, and I know I should have stopped. Daughtry's family told the judge he learned how to bid on military parts contracts while a student at Florida Community College. Chris, they said, constantly tells us how sorry he is for everything that happened and that he's ashamed and embarrassed. Dateline Anchorage, Alaska, National Boy Scouts officials apologized for remarks implying that four adult volunteers shared responsibility for their own deaths while setting up a tent beneath a power line at the National Jamboree in Virginia. On his first visit to the Middle East, Ricky Martin declared he will try to change negative perceptions of Arab youth in the West. I promise I will become a spokesperson, he said, if you allow me to. A spokesperson on your behalf. I will defend you and try to get rid of any stereotypes, he told youngsters from 16 Arab countries at a youth conference. He posed for photos with fans, at one point draping over his shoulders a traditional Arab keffiyeh headscarf with the slogan, Jerusalem is ours, written in Arabic on it. He said in a statement released later, I had no idea the keffiyeh presented to me contained language referring to Jerusalem. I apologize to anyone who might think I was endorsing its message, Martin said in a statement. Dateline New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg apologized for an incident in which heavily armed police ordered 60 tourists off a sightseeing bus and detained them for 90 minutes while checking out what he called an erroneous report of five suspicious passengers with backpacks. You also have to exercise some common sense, Bloomberg said. These half a dozen people did not present any threat whatsoever. It's a shame. I certainly apologize on behalf of the city. I believe they were Sikhs. The story I referred to earlier is about why there are no Al-Qaeda members among India's Muslim population. But check it out at HuffingtonPost.com. Oh, I'm still here. Nothing's wrong. Don't panic. Oh, by the way, I have to apologize for two errors on recent shows. I misspoke the name of Rupert Murdoch's flash young Chinese wife, Wendy Deng. I called her Anna Deng. This is apropos of Lachlan Murdoch leaving the Murdoch clan to go back to Australia because he didn't want to raise his kids in New York. Wonder why. And last week in the Los Angeles dog trainer section, I erroneously said that Los Angeles was west of Reno. Of course, the oddity of the situation is, of course, that it is east of Reno. There is this complicated apology. After setting off a swirl of protest over her appearance at a slain Marine's funeral last week, Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor Catherine Baker Knoll apologized profusely for unintentionally causing the Marine's family any additional pain or distress. Letter writers were angry about her showing up at the funeral, handing out a business card, appeared to a relative of the soldier to be campaigning, and made a puzzling remark that was interpreted as criticism of the U.S. military action in Iraq. Knoll wrote to the widow, saying she was incredibly upset after learning through press reports that the family was offended by her actions. Quote, I wanted to assure you that my intention was not to add to what must be a tremendously heartbreaking, difficult period. I've attended dozens of funerals to offer my sympathy. She said she offered a business card to a Goodrich family member as a sign of my willingness to help any way I can. Cameron Diaz accepted a public apology and undisclosed libel damages from a British newspaper over an untrue story about her and a married TV producer. A lawyer for a British newspaper apologized to model Kate Moss, acknowledging that an article alleging she collapsed into a cocaine coma was wrong. She also accepted substantial libel damages. And those, ladies and gentlemen, oh, there's one more. This is so good. A New Mexico state senator who tangled with sheriff's deputies after a complaint of alleged speeding issued a public apology Friday. John Grubasek said he acted inappropriately when deputies went to his home after a neighbor said he was driving too fast and nearly hit her teenage sons on bicycles in front of their house. He was not charged with anything. He has contacted a therapist and will get counseling to resolve what he calls his, quote, issues, unquote. Oh, and the Reverend Willie F. Wilson, one of Washington, D.C.'s most prominent pastors, issued an apology for remarks he made in a recent sermon that denounced lesbianism. He said he wished to apologize to anyone offended by his sermon at Union Temple Baptist Church. At points in the sermon, he disparaged lesbianism in graphic language and warned that it was about to take over our community. The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast, as is
Los Angeles Dog Trainer Corrections for you.
Yeah. The votes are in. Most of you wanted this to continue. Like me. An article in Friday's Section A about armored Humvees in Iraq misstated the total number of Humvees deployed in that country as 6,000. There are about 24,000. An article about constitutions in Sunday's Los Angeles Times magazine cited the following passage and attributed it to the Bill of Rights. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, etc., etc. That is, of course, from the Declaration of Independence, not from the Constitution. An article in Wednesday's sports section about baseball player Ricky Henderson said that this was his 27th season in pro baseball, and it had been 3 years since he played in a major league game. In fact, this is Henderson's 30th pro season, and he played with the Dodgers 2 years ago. An article on Tuesday about the safety of backcountry water advised backpackers and hikers to bury human waste 10 feet from the water. Many sources recommend it be buried at least 100 feet from water. Some say 200. The table on the weather page showing minutes to burn for sensitive people gave the wrong durations for Los Angeles, San Francisco, Las Vegas, and Phoenix. in an essay about feminism, Crispin Sartwell's wife was misspelled. It is Marion Winnick, not Marion Wink. And an article in the TV section, sorry, in the home section about 6 feet under, referred to sex decorator Rusty Lipscomb as Sandy Lipscomb. Well, Sandy or Rusty, it's all nicknames to me. Ladies and gentlemen, that is about to put a cap on this week's edition of the show. The program will return next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived for your computer, harryshear.com and kcrw.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow, and broadcast in thrilling low fidelity, I'm told by a listener, on Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 108. And it would be just like being in ever lower fidelity if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlists available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.